this is the greatest idea that anybody has ever come up with is the national parks. And I would like to help lead it into the future and make sure that future generations can have the experiences that I just told you about in Grand Teton, that these animals are still around, that they are thriving, and that people can still interact with them and be inspired to do what I would like to do and work for the NPS as a career and help save beautiful places.
Welcome to the Dear Bob and Sue podcast, stories from our journey to all the U.S. national parks and other public lands. I'm Matt Smith.
And I'm Karen Smith. We're the authors of the Dear Bob and Sue series of books. National Park Week is April 20th through 28th. And in honor of that, we're featuring an interview we did with Jacob Wolfley, who's just beginning his career as a ranger with the National Park Service.
We met Jacob last summer at Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota, where Jacob was an intern leading cave tours along with other park duties. We recently talked to him about what the experience was like and his future plans with the Park Service.
And for all of you who are considering a career with the National Park Service, Jacob talks about how to get started and what it takes to get hired as a park ranger.
But first, we'll talk about what National Park Week entails and a little history about how the NPS got started.
Well, it's not a little history, Matt. It's called History Channel.
Is it ever a little history? All right. Let's talk about National Park Week, which in the year we're recording this, which is 2024, it's April 20th through 28th. It's a 9-day celebration about everything that has to do with parks, Karen.
I know. It's very exciting, very fun. This is the big week out of the year where we celebrate our National Park Service and the more than 400 National Park units. And they are all in different shapes and sizes and types.
How many of these units do you think we've been to?
We should be keeping track.
Yeah, because we've been to a lot of NPS sites outside of the national parks.
Right.
Yeah, we used to go to DC before we even went on our national park journey. So there's a bunch of sites.
It's like 100 in Washington, D.C.
I know. We probably went to 50 of them.
Well, in all total, the National Park Service manages 429 individual units. I think that's the latest count, although there have been some new ones recently. I think 429 is the current count, and that covers more than 85 million acres in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, as you mentioned, and U.S. territories.
Yeah. Now, while there are at least 19 naming designations, these units are commonly referred to as parks. All of them are considered parks. If you talk to a ranger at one of the units that's not a national park, they will tell you, no, this is a national park also. It's just a unit in the NPS.
So when we say naming designations, what we're talking about are things like national monuments and national seashores, national historic sites, and so on. Just to be clear, again, there are 429 of those units, and 63 of those have the designation of national park. But like you said, Matt, they're all parks in our national park system.
And we love each of them equally.
And we are celebrating each of them equally for National Park Service Week. Now, if you happen to be visiting any of these park units during National Park Week, be sure to ask them at the visitor center about any special activities they might have going on, because I know it varies from park to park.
Yeah, it does. And we recommend that anyway. Anytime you visit one of these NPS sites, look at the website first for things like closures or other special notices, but also special things they might be doing this week. And if you're on any social media accounts, check out their social media pages, because a lot of times they have different themes for each day.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because I think that's kind of fun. So kicking off the week on Saturday, April 20th, first of all, the big news is that all entrance fees are waived on April 20th. So any national park unit that charges an entrance fee, that's going to be waived and you can get in for free.
It's Park RX Day.
That's the theme.
Oh, I don't know what I don't know what RX means.
It means prescription. You know, the RX is in a prescription.
Yeah, to get a dose of nature.
Yes, yes. I see. It's very clever. They say that they want to encourage everyone to connect with nature on Saturday and, quote, fill your park prescription.
Okay, so maybe don't check out the themes for the day because that's a little weird.
No, they're correlating how getting outside in nature can make a big difference in our health and our well-being. So their little phrase is healthy parks, healthy people.
Okay, so that's Saturday.
That's Saturday.
You get your
right.
prescription filled, your vitamin P. I just came up with that just now.
Good.
That just happened.
Okay, you know what? Yeah. I think the NPS is going to be calling. You should trademark that right now.
Yeah. Well, but you know what I'd like? I'd like to know what happens on Sunday, the next day, April 21st.
Okay, good question. Sunday, the park is honoring their volunteers and also asking for volunteers. They would like folks to use their time and talents to volunteer in their national parks. Mainly, you know, one of the big ones is we can all do this, is pick up trash, right?
Well, how about not throwing your trash on the ground to begin with?
Well, right.
Let's start there. Now, this is also very convenient for the NPS because Monday, April 22nd, is Earth Day, Karen.
Yes, and they're going to be celebrating, globally encouraging both education and stewardship of our planet's natural resources. So not so much the parks themselves, but everything, our oceans, our rivers, everything. It's Earth Day. So
that's a global celebration.
That is a global celebration of the Earth.
Now, we're just 3 days into this, and it's quite a lot, but Tuesday, April 23rd. Karen, this is Innovation Day.
I know. And I like this one because it has to do with history. They're going to be celebrating the history of our nation's innovation in preserving our national parks. So there will be a lot of projects happening throughout the parks and a lot of programs. Also, you know, I think a lot of these parks are going to be having virtual events. So if you have a favorite park, you know, look on their website because there might be some things you can tune into virtually.
Okay. Now, Wednesday, April 24th, this is Workforce Wednesday. I like the alliteration.
Uh-huh.
You can meet the incredible workforce of the employees, interns, the fellows, volunteers, contractors, partners, and more.
And it's very timely with our interview today with Jacob because he has been part of this workforce. You know, they're encouraging people to work for the National Park Service and volunteer. And they have a link about this and we will put that in our show notes.
Okay. What's Thursday, Karen?
Thursday, April 25th is Youth Engagement. That is calling the rising generation of stewards.
The youngins.
The young ones, right.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
It's not for us, Matt.
Are we taking Thursday off?
We're April taking 25th? Thursday off.
Okay. You can find us at a brewery/pizza place.
Right.
Because we're not the youth engagement. All right, but Friday, April 26th, now it's Community Connections.
Right, and I think that's a really important role that the National Park Service plays, being good community partners with the communities that are outside the parks, you know, working with organizations in and around the parks.
Yeah. Okay, that was Friday. Now, mm-hmm. Saturday, April 27th. Now, this is a little confusing to me because this is Junior Ranger Day for kids or kids at heart. So this isn't just like the Youth Engagement Day a couple days before. Junior Ranger Day is all about becoming a Junior Ranger and by being involved through in-person and online activities.
Well, right. And I think we've mentioned before that you do not have to be a kid to be a Junior Ranger. Anyone can do the Junior Ranger program. Now, we haven't done it yet, but we're going to be going to a National Park Service site this coming week. And I am going to do the Junior Ranger program. And Matt, I think you're going to do it with me. Is that right?
You're going to sign up? I don't know. Somebody has to document it. I got to hold the camera.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, no, I'll be doing the pledge while I'm holding the camera.
Oh, okay, good. Great. I like
all it. Right.
And the last day, Sunday, April 28th, is Arts in the Park. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, that is a long list of great themes, mm-hmm. day by day for National Park Week.
Right.
So that's about it. Thanks for tuning in to our episode.
So I just thought that this would be a good time, Matt, to discuss briefly, very briefly, how the National Park Service got its start. How did it come into being?
Bean, you are trying to compete with Ken Burns here, aren't you?
How am I doing so far?
Doing great. I think you should do the History Channel music, Karen.
Okay, here we go. All right. So as everyone knows, or most people know, that Yellowstone was our very first national park, and it was established way, way back in 1872. But it wasn't until 1916 that the National Park Service was established. How many years is that, Matt?
44.
Oh, wow. That was quick. I wasn't expecting you to.
Was that your opportunity to trick me into doing math in public? So there you go. 44 years.
Okay. So by that time, by 1916, the Interior Department was responsible at this point for 14 national parks and 21 national monuments, but they didn't have an organization to manage them. So if you think about some of our biggest and best national parks were already in existence, like Yellowstone, Sequoia, Yosemite, Mount Rainier, Crater Lake, Wind Cave, Mesa Verde, Glacier, Rocky Mountain, those are all in existence by now, but no one's manning the store.
They just put a fence around them and that's it. These are national parks. And there was probably bad behavior going on inside those parks.
Well, that is exactly the problem. And there is no authority that is operating and advocating for these parks and monuments. And they're receiving uneven attention and very minimal federal support. So things are in turmoil. Now, what's really interesting is what was the turning point that finally established the National Park Service? And this might be a surprise to people because I don't think it's talked about very much. But it was actually the building of the Hetch Hetchy Dam in Yosemite National Park.
I know you're pausing as if I'm supposed to say stuff, but the rules are clear about History Channel.
All right.
I'm not supposed to talk.
Okay. So between 1908 and 1913, U.S. Congress debated about whether or not to dam the Hetch Hetchy Valley in order to provide drinking water to the growing city of San Francisco. The issue was, of course, that the Hetch Hetchy Valley was within the boundaries of Yosemite National Park, and preservationists like John Muir argued ferociously that the valley should be protected against human interference because it was a national park. But as we all know, Congress eventually allowed the Hetch Hetchy Dam to be built. So after this controversy, the Sierra Club and its allies petitioned the government for stronger protection of national parkland through the creation of a unified federal service to manage the parks. So this Hetch Hetchy debacle highlighted the weakness of our park movement. And one of the men who recognized this was Stephen T. Mather, who at the time was a wealthy Chicago businessman. When Mather complained to the Secretary of the Interior about all the park's mismanagement, he invited him to Washington to be his assistant for park matters. So Mather arrived in 1915, and he started his crusade for a National Parks Bureau. And Mather's deal was he focused on the economic value of parks as tourist meccas. And he carried out this huge public relations campaign that led to articles in National Geographic, the Saturday Evening Post, and other popular magazines. Mather even went so far as to hire his own publicist, and he obtained money from 17 Western railroads to produce what was called the National Parks Portfolio, which was a beautifully illustrated publication that was sent to congressmen and other influential citizens. So guess what, Matt? This campaign worked. Congress was swayed, and on August 25th, 1916, President Woodrow Wilson approved legislation creating the National Park Service within the Interior Department, and this was through the National Park Service Organic Act. I feel like there should be trumpets going off here.
Well, you have our sound effects account.
Okay. And then, appropriately enough, Stephen Mather became the first head of the National Park Service. And, you know, one of his claims to fame in this position was he was the one who introduced concession operations into the national parks where tourists could buy food, you know, hotels were built where they could stay inside the parks. He even promoted the creation of a highway system that would make the parks more accessible by automobiles. So Mather's idea was let's bring the people to the parks.
Well, yeah. And I think from a practical standpoint, you really need to do that because if the people hadn't supported these parks, Congress wouldn't have authorized more of them. They wouldn't allocate funding. So it was really a practicality to get the American citizens to fall in love with the parks so that when it came time to allocate funds, they were in support of that.
Well, absolutely. And that's what grew our national park system. Once the infrastructure in these parks was set up and people started flocking to them, the rest is history.
The rest is history. Okay, so that's a great historic summary.
Thank you, Matt.
Of how the National Park Service came about.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about our interview.
Yes, today's interview, which is the feature of this episode, you know, it seems like a lot of people are interested in working for the National Park Service, maybe as a seasonal employee or maybe as a full-time career. But I think a lot of people don't know what it takes to get started and what the job is really like.
Yes, and in this episode, we're talking to Jacob Wolfley, who was an intern last summer at Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota. And we met him.
We did. And it was really great to meet him. So Jacob had reached out to us earlier in the year, this is last year, to let us know that he would be interning there at Wind Cave for the summer. And he said, you know, if we happen to be in the area, please stop by the park and say hello. And as it turned out, we already had plans to visit Teddy Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota at the end of May. So after Jacob reached out to us, we decided we would then just make a beeline south to Wind Cave.
So a little bit of background on Jacob. He was born in Denver, Colorado, but coincidentally, he grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, just like I did, and you grew up close by.
I know.
In Topeka, Kansas.
That is a coincidence.
Yeah. Now, he's currently getting his undergraduate degree in geological engineering at South Dakota Mines in Rapid City, South Dakota, and he will be graduating in May of next year.
So we'll play the interview with Jacob now. I just wanted to mention, though, we did start out with a question about Wind Cave specifically. You might have heard us mention in a recent episode that the Wind Cave tours will be canceled this summer due to the elevator replacement project. And we have had a lot of people asking us, why can't the rangers simply take visitors in and out through the natural cave entrance? So we're going straight to the source. And we wanted to address this first with Jacob before we started talking about careers with the NPS.
Okay, so here is our interview with Jacob.
All right, good morning, Jacob.
Good morning.
It's so nice to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, it's great that you're here.
Absolutely. It's really great to be here. I've been listening for a long time now. I've read all the books, so very happy to be here.
Well, thank you. So before we get started, you know, talking about today's subject, we wanted to ask you really quickly. In the opening, Matt and I mentioned the sad news that the Wind Cave tours are going to be canceled for, well, probably for most of the summer, it looks like. And so why can't the tours just go down that natural entrance on the stairs and come back up?
Yeah, can't you just open the gates and let them in?
Hey, folks, come on in. Yeah, I totally wish we could. And I'll answer a second question, too, that I got frequently while I worked at Wind Cave. It's why don't we just let people go in there? Well, it is one of the most complex caves in the world. There are many, many different ways that you could get lost, crawl down something that you're not supposed to, and never be found again. So that's not the best idea. Now, your main question, why can't you just take a tour without the elevators? Now, you guys have taken the natural entrance tour,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're somewhat familiar with it. So you go into this airlock and then you start descending immediately. Now, these are not nice stairs. They were built by the CCC. They are steep. They are not a uniform steepness. They're not easy to navigate. And that makes it very, very difficult for people to do. Now, if we were to do out and back tours, as, you know, people are suggesting, you know, Wind Cave is very narrow as well. There's a lot of passages where you can only go one way. And trying to figure out how we can get groups to pass each other in that environment is not a good idea. Now, let's say, you know, safety is, of course, our most important concern at the park. Let's say we had an issue on one of those tours and we needed to get somebody out. If we were to take them back up those 150 very, very steep stairs, well, they're probably not going to be able to do that. So we have to bring in what we call a stair chair. Now, the stair chair, basically, it's got tank tracks on the back of it that can kind of elevate back. So we're going to have to put this person in this chair and use this motor to kind of drag them, literally using these tank tracks, up all of these stairs. And that, let me tell you, if I've had training on that, that is not an easy task. It is not safe, and it takes a long time.
If they weren't having a heart attack before, they would by the time they got to the top of the stairs.
Yeah, basically. I mean, we all had to take turns. I had to ride in it. It was scary riding in that. It was a little frightening. So having a situation where we can't get you out in a good time frame is not something that the park is willing to tolerate. Yes, I know it's annoying. Believe me, I do, that we can't have tours this summer, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and for people who haven't done the cave tour yet, I might add, too, that when you're going down those stairs, first of all, it's dark.
Yes,
I mean, it's dark. And then it's also, I know when we did it, it was the stairs were wet and they were kind of slippery because of all the humidity. So you've also got that too.
This was a wetter season. Yeah, it was more wet than it usually is. But, you know, that area, it does get some moisture. So, you know, it's slippery, it's steep, it's dark.
We had a lot of people also comment that when they were there last summer and the summer before, their tours were canceled because the elevator was temporarily down. So did you have issues on your tours with the elevator not working last summer?
Yeah, I can't tell you. I've lost track of how many times we've had to evacuate the cave because the elevator stopped working. It was my first, I was on a weekend and that's when the elevator started not working. And then the next day I was leading a fairgrounds tour and they flashed the lights three times, which means we need to call up and see what's going on. And they're like, hey, the elevators are not working. So that evacuation with the elevators not working involved bringing everybody out those 150 stairs. Wow.
But the good news is there are other great things to do at Wind Cave National Park.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, Wind Cave is still absolutely worth a visit. I go down there frequently myself, and I'm always there to hike because Wind Cave has some of the best wildlife that you will see anywhere.
Yeah, and we experienced that too. We've hiked a few times, and just surprising every time. Gosh, we saw coyotes chasing some bison. We saw a big herd come kind of towards us, which is great. We gave them some space, but it was great to see them. And gosh, we saw no other hikers.
I know.
Absolutely. It's a very empty park in terms of hiking, but it is absolutely fantastic. You know, we've got bison, elk, prairie dogs, coyotes. I've never seen more coyotes than I have in Wind Cave.
When we were there last summer, when we met you, we were amazed by how many bison were right next to the road and really, really close to the visitor center. It was our best bison sighting trip to Wind Cave ever. So that's really fun to see. So yeah, we would encourage people go to the visitor center, which is great.
And we're getting all new exhibits, and it looks fantastic. We've got a lot of new stuff. We've got a little fake cave that people can walk through. So, you know, there's your supplement.
Well, plus I just have to throw in that Wind Cave has some of the most unique park history, you know, one of our earliest parks and how the bison, you know, were restored.
That's right. That's the first place they were brought
to. Right, from New York City.
Right, right.
from New York and Yellowstone. Yeah. Yep.
So people should go just to get the feel of that alone, just the history, the bison, all that good stuff. So yes, we would absolutely encourage people who are going to the Black Hills to definitely go to Wind Cave, even if the tours aren't running.
Absolutely. And I'm going to do a shameless plug. If any of you are visiting the Black Hills this summer, you know, look me up on Instagram. I'm jacob.hikes. DM me, you know, ask me any questions that you want. I'm more than happy to help.
That's perfect. That's perfect. We'll put that in our show notes too, Jacob.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool.
All right. Well, I guess we could get started then.
You're... Sure. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So to the topic at hand, Jacob, about sort of how someone would get started finding a job in the National Park Service. Let's go back to the very beginning for you personally. Why did you want to seek out a job with the NPS? Like, what spurred you to find this job at Wind Cave?
So I was already kind of heading in the engineering direction. That's what I'm studying here at South Dakota Mines is geological engineering. And I spent a lot of time out here in the Black Hills, and I had visited many national parks in the summers before my family started doing that. And I would say it was really Yellowstone that turned me on to it. And I know the exact spot. It's the, you guys may have been there, it's the Lake Butte Overlook in Yellowstone, where you've got this beautiful view of Yellowstone Lake. You can see some of the thermal features. You can see the Tetons to the south. And it's just like, okay, maybe this is something that I would like to do in the future. Work in beautiful places such as this. So I'd say Yellowstone really made me want to work for the Park Service.
I love that. And I love that, you know, when you think about people taking their kids to the parks, you never know what kind of an influence that's going to have on them, what moment they might have out there that's going to sort of steer the course of their life.
Right. And living in Missouri, it wasn't, you know, there's pretty places around. But when you go out west and see stuff like that, it's like that'll change you for sure.
So I was wondering why you wanted to work at Wind Cave specifically, and maybe it's because you were a student close by. Is that mainly the reason? Or
yeah, there's part of it that's definitely it's a convenience factor, but I do also love Wind Cave. I went there many times before I actually applied there, and I just love the park. And I like caves, maybe not as much as you, Karen, but I do enjoy them very much.
Have you been to Carlsbad Caverns yet, Jake?
You know, I have not. And I just, every time I look at pictures from there, I'm like, oh my goodness.
You know what? Like, you should meet us awesome. There sometime. And you and I could do the belly crawling one.
We'll do the belly crawling tour. That's right.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And Matt can.
Cannot. Yeah. I will not.
And we'll do the put your scrotum in a vice tour. And
that's, or poison spider. I'd like to do the poison spider.
Yeah. The poison spider one. Yeah. Yeah.
Can we get the poison spiders while we're stuck in a hole crawling on our belly so you can't get away from the poison spiders?
Yeah, maybe there'd be a snake or two just to chop
it off. Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So when you decided that, hey, maybe I'd like to work at Wind Cave, what was the application process and interview process like? What did you have to go through to get this job?
What I did, it was pretty simple. I was just interning at Wind Cave. So I found on their park website, they're like summer 2023 interns. And so there was an email on there that I should email my resume to and just kind of talk about, you know, why I wanted that position. So I sent it in and probably a little while later, I got an email back and they wanted an interview. It was a phone interview. So they called me up and we talked, had a great conversation. And then the next morning I got the job. So It was a fairly easy process for me. The internship that I did was with interpretation, so I was giving the tours, but there are many, many different kinds of opportunities out there as well.
Yeah, but let's just be clear. If you have a documented incident of touching cave formations when you're not supposed to,
right?
Wait a minute. I'm disqualified.
It would have to be disclosed, right? I mean, that's right. That's going to come up. And
there's a background check, exactly. You know.
I'm really sorry we put that in the book, that it's in writing. I really regret that we did that because I feel like it's going to ruin my future chances.
Well, they didn't ask me in the interview how many times I had touched cave walls, but...
So maybe there's a chance.
Maybe there's a chance.
There's still imaginary ranger opportunities available.
That's right. Off-duty imaginary.
Always off-duty.
All right. So, Jacob, tell us, what were your duties at Wind Cave? What specifically did they have you doing? I know you mentioned you gave cave tours. Were there other things?
Yes, that was the predominant thing that I did, 3 to 4 tours a day. They would also have me working at the information desk, answering visitors' questions, helping them check in. And we also, you know, when the elevators were down, we did some surface programs as well. But there's also project time, and project time is a big part of interpretive jobs. That might involve making a new brochure, a new hiking guide, updating park resources for visitors' use. So that was also a big part of my job as well.
I think it's pretty amazing how much responsibility they give to an intern.
Yeah.
You're giving tours, you're at the information desk. I think that's fantastic.
Yes, there was only one day where I kind of felt like a quote-unquote intern as I was helping unload the Unigrid maps. We got a big truckload of them, and we were just having to put all this stuff on dollies and reel them into the visitor center. I'm like, this is the first time that I felt like an actual intern, like this is intern work here.
Hey, I wanted to ask you about Ranger Dawn.
Yeah. You know,
when we went... our first time, what was that, 2011, he was our guide for the cave tour, and people talked about what a legend he was. He was phenomenal. So he's still there, isn't he? We didn't see him this past...
Well, he just retired this summer. This was his last summer. He had been there for 55 years.
Wow.
Which is incredible. He's from New York originally. When he got hired for this position, they actually sent him a telegram and offered him the job. He, of course, jokes on his tours that, well, being from New York, he's like, well, this is the first place I could find parking, so I stayed.
Ugh, that's funny.
But yes, he's a Wind Cave legend for sure.
Do you think he'll be around for any reason, or is he headed out, or do you know?
Oh, no, he definitely will. I mean, he lives probably at most 10 minutes away from the visitor center. So he's looming somewhere. So.
Well, good. Maybe we'll have a chance to meet him. We're going to be back this next summer. So maybe we can finally meet Dawn. Well, I mean, of course we met him during the tour, but I mean, we didn't have a chance to really talk to him while we were on that.
I had the book. It was the day that you guys were visiting and I was talking to him and I was kind of reading the Wind Cave section. And I showed him, I'm like, oh, look, you're mentioned in this book. And he's like, yeah, I know.
That's the reaction we get from most people that we mention in the book.
Yeah.
Bob and Sue even say that.
Yeah.
Little shoulder shrug. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So of all those duties that you told us about that you did, was there one particular thing that you loved doing the most? Like when they said, all right, Jacob, you know, you're doing this today. Were you like, yes.
Oh, well, you know what my favorite thing was, is, well, this is what an introvert I am, is going down into the cave and checking all the phones.
That's the job I want.
Yes.
You guys are a lot alike, yeah. I have to say.
Yeah. My supervisors quickly figured out that this was my favorite thing to do, is because I got to go into the cave by myself.
So for people who don't know, are those phones just strictly for emergencies? You call up or they call down if something happens? Is that what those are for?
Well, they don't normally call down because they don't really know where we are in the cave, so we just call up. But yeah, those are used for emergencies, you know, in case somebody's having a medical issue, we would call them and let them know. And I use it to call up as well, you know, in the case of the lights are flashing, there's something wrong. A lot of times we have storms in the area and they would flash the lights and say, hey, maybe we need you to stay down there for a little while longer. There's quite a bit of lightning in the area.
Oh, wow. So stretch that program out a little bit.
That's right. Slow down. Yeah. That's when I ask if they have any questions. Yeah.
I guess you don't have to worry about tornadoes when you're doing that job.
No, that's a very safe place to be.
All right. So if people are interested in a career as a ranger, I know we touched on this briefly, but maybe you could just mention the different levels. So, you know, if you start as an intern, hopefully, and then like, what would you do the next summer or the next summer?
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to call it in terms of its pay grade scale. So the federal government has these levels that are called GS levels. So the lowest one, the most basic one, it's called Park Guide. It's a GS4. So for this one, it doesn't require any past experience in the National Park Service. That's like you're basically your foot in the door job where you can start to gain some experience. So park guides, they basically do what I did as an intern. They would lead the three basic tours, the Garden of Eden, the fairgrounds tour, and the natural entrance tour. They would also man the information desk, like I did, interacting with junior rangers, all the typical stuff. Now, the next level, the actual designated park ranger job, is a GS5. Now, this one requires that you either have a little bit of experience working for the National Park Service, or that you have a degree. So next year, when I go back to Wind Cave, I will be able to apply as a GS5 because I will be graduated and I will have that degree. I won't have enough experience to warrant it, but because I have that degree, I can get to that position.
Got it. So you can just skip the GS4.
Exactly. And that is a little more advanced. I can only speak to Wind Cave, really. This is going to vary by each park on what the difference is between a GS4 and what a GS5 is. But GS5s at my park would start to lead things like the Wild Cave tour, the Candlelight tour. They would also have a campground program that they would lead as well. So you're responsible for a little more. Your schedule is a little more varied than it would be as a GS4. It's very rare to have a GS6 interpretive position. They can be in other divisions like resource management, law enforcement. Maybe I'm not as familiar with that. But a GS7, the next one up, those are kind of the supervisor people. So at Wind Cave, they were in charge of cave operations, working on the lights. They were working in the office. If one of us was having a problem with the visitor, it's like they're kind of like the manager. They would come up and ask.
Is there anything on top of the GS7? Does it continue?
Well, GS7, that's generally like the highest seasonal job that you can have. So if you're interested in seasonal positions, those can roughly be, you know, for half a year. If you're interested and want a permanent position, what that requires is 2 years of seasonal work. Let's say after I graduate, I'd like to go back to Wind Cave. So I could be there for, you know, roughly 4 or 5, 6 months-ish. Then it's like, okay, maybe I want to go to, since it's winter, maybe I want to go somewhere warmer. I could go down to the Grand Canyon or Arches or something like that that's a little warmer. And I could do that for 4 seasons and then be eligible for a permanent position at a park. That's where you just work at that park alone all year round, 24/7.
That kind of sounds like a great idea. I'd go to maybe Everglades in the winter where it's really warm.
I've got a few friends who are down there right now. They've worked there for a couple winters in the past. So that would be a great park to be in the winter.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you too about a lot of the parks. When you're a ranger there, they also provide some employee housing. Is that right?
Yeah, most places do provide housing. I lived in Mission 66 housing. There are some of my friends who lived in CCC housing, actually.
Oh,
so
wow.
Those are still used as well.
I'm guessing they've updated those maybe.
Yes, they have. They're actually, mine was really nice, I thought. I mean, it had everything that you need.
That's a really nice perk.
I have a question for you. What are the positives, or what were the positives of your job? And give us the inside scoop, both the positives and the negatives of being a ranger.
Yeah, there are a lot of positives, as you can imagine. I mean, there were days that I would wake up and open the window and, hey, there's some bison out grazing on the hill. I mean, that's a nice sight to wake up to, for sure. I like to hike like you guys do. And one of the great things about Wind Cave and a few other parks around the country is they kind of let you just wander wherever you want. So I would literally walk out of my house after work and say, I'm going to go that way and just start walking. And eventually I'd find, you know, bison or elk or coyotes, even after a rough day. That kind of can remind you of why you're out here doing this.
So you brought up an interesting point, which I think sometimes a lot of visitors to the parks are confused about, which is some parks you are required to stay on trails.
Yes.
And other parks, I don't know if you call it cross country, but they let you go anywhere. Now, there's still rules, like you still want to hike on hard surfaces if at all possible, yes, and be careful of the vegetation. But it sounds like Wind Cave is one of those parks where you can hike anywhere.
Yes, yes. Part of that is because of the bison. There are a lot of them, and the park understands that sometimes they may be sitting, and this has commonly occurred, right on the trail that you're going
right
on. Right. Yes. So it's like they don't want you to stand there. You want to go around it. So that's part of it. I think Badlands does the same thing for a similar reason. Is there's wildlife that will be sitting on the trail and they're not going to move. So you have to.
And I just wanted to mention too, when we're talking about hiking, you sent us a while ago your hiking spreadsheet.
Yes.
That we had fun looking at. And it's funny because it reminds me so much of Matt.
Yes.
He's a big spreadsheet person. But I think that's cool. You had all of your hikes, not just your hikes, but the area they were in, the day you did them, the weather,
right,
the distance, all that. That's a really cool thing to do.
What can I say? I'm just a nerd. I like numbers and it makes me happy. So it's kind of fun. You know, recently I just passed 1,100 miles in South Dakota. So because I had all these formulas set up, I was able to know that, which is kind of fun.
It is fun. It's such a great idea. I wish we would have thought of that a long, long time ago, because, you know, it's hard to go back and recapture that.
Yeah.
So it's great that you're doing that as you hike and you can chart your progress, so to speak, and remember where you were.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. That's going to drive me nuts forever.
Yes.
I can't go back 14 years and recreate that. Even with even
I mean,
with
how much GPS data do you have from your hikes? I mean, you could go back a ways, you know.
Well, and we have photos, too, with the date. And, you know, so we could also look through our photos.
Yeah.
But, Jacob, let me ask you this, though. If you could recreate that and you knew that there were a handful of hikes that you didn't have data on, would that bother you?
Oh, tremendously.
Of course it would.
I've got OC, too. I mean, it's not.
So I know this is the value of age. I know that this is a foolish endeavor for me to even start.
Right, a thing to start now. Yeah.
It would absolutely drive me crazy knowing that there were missing hikes.
Well, yeah. I mean, we could start now going forward, I suppose.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I was a little late on it. This was like when I was still running a lot, and that was like my main thing. And then I switched to hiking, and then I started keeping track. So there's probably maybe 200 miles that are not logged here in the Black Hills on that, which drives me a little nuts, but
yeah. Because it might be 210 or it could be 190.
And that's the thing. I just don't know. I mean, it's terrible.
Don't torture Jacob.
Yeah. Well, my goal is to hike once around the earth. So that's like 24,901 miles. So,
oh, you'll get that.
I'm almost 6% of the way there. So slowly but surely making it.
Okay, so we were talking about the positives. So I don't know if you were finished with that thought, but then Matt was also asking, did you encounter anything?
Well, yes, there are some negatives, like with anything. I'll list a few more positives too. I like talking to visitors who are excited to be there. One of my favorite things to do on the tour is beforehand, I go out early and I like to start interacting with them a little bit. And I have them quiz me. I have them tell me a national park and they see if I can name a fun fact about that national park. And I have a fun fact about all of them. So they never really stump me, but that's kind of just a fun little way to start to get it going a little bit. Get people comfortable with, you know, asking me something and me giving an answer. So I really like doing that.
I would imagine you're so good at that because you're passionate and you love your park. And so, I'm sure that's a huge bonus for your park tour folks. Our tour guide that we had was also, you know, really engaging and got the kind of the crowd involved. So it makes a huge difference. I think that's great.
That's right. Yeah. I think you had Ranger Peely, and he is, he's got a lot of energy, and he loves to interact with visitors.
Right, for sure. Right.
A lot of enthusiasm.
Yes, love it.
So you mentioned, you know, a negative. No, there aren't a lot of negatives. That's for sure. I should say the most frustrating thing is, and I'm, you know, listening to the podcast, you guys know when visitors are disrespecting the resource, that drives me nuts. You know, when they're touching things or, you know, getting too close to the bison, not having that level of respect to say, hey, that's a wild animal, I need to keep my distance. That was really the most frustrating thing to deal with. And that's when you go on a hike later and remind yourself why you're doing this. That's definitely a frustrating thing for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, we mentioned that in Dear Bob and Sue when we talked about our tour with Ranger Don. And it really bothered us that as he is speaking to the group about, you know, some miraculous cave formation, people are carrying on their own conversations.
Right.
About Taco Bell and the new hot sauce.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And we were, that just drove us nuts because it's disrespectful. We can't hear the ranger. You know, just if you're on the tour, pay attention to the tour.
You're paying to be there. This is an incredible environment. You know, why don't you learn something new?
Exactly. All right. I know we had talked in the past about you're interested in continuing your career with the NPS. Do you have a favorite park destination, like a goal? My dream is to work at this particular park.
Yes. Yes, I do. Grand Teton is my absolute favorite park. I've had, especially in the past year, I've had some incredible experiences there. Truly life-changing. So I just absolutely love that park. I'm a big mountain guy, and that is just an absolutely incredible place. I actually saw a wolverine while I was there in October.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
on the trail. Actually, do we have time for a little story here?
Sure.
Sure.
We were going up the Cascade Canyon Trail. My friend and I, we were doing the whole paintbrush divide loop. So you go up Cascade Canyon and back down Paintbrush Canyon and over this little pass. And we were having a great morning. It was almost my 21st birthday. So my friend and I, we go out there every year and we were celebrating that. And so I'm looking and I see this little red thing on the trail. I'm like, what is that? And it turns and it looks at me and it's a wolverine. And I'm like, you know, like, oh my gosh, how incredibly rare is this? This is absolutely amazing. Also a little freaked out because those things could rip you apart if they really wanted to. But this one did not seem to care that we were there. So I had my big camera and I was getting some pictures of it. And I'm like, wow, this is really fantastic. And all of a sudden we hear wrestling in the trees. And 5 feet away from us, out walks this grizzly bear onto the trail, like, you know, and so I'm like, okay, bear spray is ready. I don't want to do this, but I will if I have to. So we start yelling at it, hey, bear, just doing what you're supposed to. And it gets freaked out. So it starts running the other way down the trail. And it's like, okay, let's just get out of the area. So we start, you know, we're not running because you're not supposed to run, especially with bears around. So we're just quickly walking up the trail and we hear more wrestling in the woods. And it's like, what is that? And there's the biggest bull moose I have ever seen is paralleling the trail. And moose honestly scare me more than bears do. So we're like, uh-oh. You know, we speed up even more. That was like a craziest 2 minutes of my life. My heart is just like pounding. And it was right then, actually, that according to my spreadsheet, that I hit 1,000 miles of hiking. was right in the middle of this. I'm like, what a perfect way to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a trifecta. A wolverine, a grizzly bear, and bull moose.
Yeah, all within the span of about 2 minutes. We saw the entire ecosystem. It was all there. In fact, on the way to the trailhead, we had seen four grizzly bears just like grazing all right next to each other.
So did you say that was October-ish?
Yes, that was, October.
I wonder if because there are fewer people there, then it's a much quieter season.
That very well could be, for sure. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, so when you get that dream job in Grand Teton, Jacob, we'll be coming to see you.
Absolutely, yeah.
What kind of ranger do you want to be? Do you want to be interpretive? Do you want to be law enforcement? A GS7, of course, but...
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, later, this is pretty ambitious, but I would like to get into leadership positions in the Park Service. This is the greatest idea that anybody has ever come up with is the national parks, and I would like to help lead it into the future and make sure that future generations can have the experiences that, you know, I just told you about in Grand Teton, that these animals are still around, that they are thriving, and that people can still interact with them and be inspired to do what I would like to do and work for the NPS as a career and help save, you know, beautiful places.
Oh, gosh, you're going to make me cry, Jacob. I have to tell you, the National Park Service is lucky to have someone like you who is so passionate.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
When we left after meeting you that day at Wind Cave, we were talking about you and I was saying how lucky Wind Cave is to have you because, you know, you're just such a great spokesperson for the parks and your enthusiasm, your passion. It's what the Park Service needs. So we're so happy that you have found this. You know, hopefully this is a career for you. And we're just going to follow you around.
Maybe Jacob becomes a superintendent of a park. Maybe that's your chance. Maybe that's your in.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't mean you get to start touching the cave just because.
No, still can't break the rules. and you'll be on permanent probation, even if you're imaginary, always off duty.
I will hire you as my imaginary off-duty park ranger. How about that?
I love it. I love it. All right. And don't forget, we are seriously going to do one of those belly crawling cave tours. I'll see what I can
find. I'll tell you what, next year you come back to Wind Cave when I'm leading Wild Cave and we'll do it.
It's a date. All right, Jacob. Well, this has been so much fun chatting with you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. And yeah, this has been a great conversation.
It has. Hopefully we didn't take up too much of your hiking day. It's Saturday.
No, the days are getting later and later, so I got more daylight to work with now. So
all right. Well, you have a great hike and we will see you this summer when we come back to the Black Hills.
That's right. That's right. I look forward to it.
All right. That was great to meet Jacob and start a friendship with him. And then eventually we got together on Zoom a couple times and then we did the interview. So it was great to be able to capture those conversations.
I know. And I cannot wait to go on a cave tour with Jacob. I'm sure you're going to want to join us, Matt, on some of those belly crawling tours. But
yeah, probably not. But you could take pictures.
You know, one of the great things about our travels last year is that we had the pleasure of meeting several different rangers from different parks who had a wide variety of duties and experiences. But the one thing they had in common is they were all really passionate about their jobs and the parks that they worked in. And, you know, we came away feeling like it gave us hope for the future of the parks. Because, you know, Matt, it takes a special person to be a park ranger.
It does. It takes a person with not only a lot of talent, but a lot of patience.
Yes.
Yeah, they're dealing with the general public often, and that can be a tough job to be diplomatic and to have a great attitude every single time they meet a new visitor. Because a lot of times these rangers, they're explaining a site or a resource or something about the park for the thousandth time, but we have met park rangers who do it And it sounds like it's the first time they've ever explained it because of their enthusiasm about that thing.
I know, it is remarkable. You know, it's something we would never have the patience or tolerance to do. It takes a special person, and thank goodness the National Park Service has a lot of these special people in the roles of rangers throughout the parks, because they truly are the stewards of the parks, right? They're the ones that visitors are going to meet, are going to interact with, and, you know, part of the impression of the parks that they're going to come away with is that interaction with the ranger.
That's right. They're great ambassadors for the parks. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We really do appreciate you tuning in.
We certainly do. And be sure to check out our show notes for Jacob's Instagram info if you want to follow him or message him about anything related to Wind Cave. We'll also put a link to a specific National Park Service page that has more information about careers and jobs with the Park Service.
Yeah, we hope everyone has a chance to visit an NPS site this week.
Yes, happy National Park Week.